Now, here's a little story I got to tell.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the show. Thank you for tuning in, wherever it is you're tuned in from, and however it is you're listening to the show. This is Giants Amongst Us, where we share in the unique human experience and where you're going to hear every time real stories told by real people, people just like yourself. These stories are testaments, they're examples of what the human spirit is capable of, how change can be made, how a life can be recovered that was once broken, that was once hopeless, that was once destitute. And this is what we share and this is what we celebrate. It's not to say what help somebody else is going to help you, but the fact that by you listening to these stories, they may encourage you, they may inspire you to want to start looking inward and working on yourself if you're not satisfied with where you're at, if you're not happy with the way things are going. We're all works in progress. This isn't for everybody, but it's about building, it's about evolving, it's about growing, it's about maturing, and try to make the best out of this overall human experience that we all share in. So you guys kick your feet up as you let this play in the background, or you can take this with you as you stroll through the woods or around the block, or do whatever it is you do as you listen to this. It's good to be back. It's good to share another story. And today, Ethan joins us, and he's got a story to tell. In school, everything came pretty easy for Ethan. It was a breeze. His teachers considered him gifted. But not too long into high school, he started to notice some changes. Depression, feeling sluggish throughout the day, brain fog, problems with sleep. His condition, it wouldn't get any better. He found himself struggling socially, shying away from people, feeling awkward, overwhelmed with anxiety, which was a startling contrast to how he was as a child. This led him down a year-long journey trying to figure out what was affecting him mentally, physically, emotionally. And despite all his efforts, engaging in hobbies, intermittent fasting, changes in his diet, psychotherapy, his condition seemed to only get worse. Eventually, while doing his own research, digging through all the weeds and trying to find information, he stumbled upon a condition and things for him started to click. Upper airway resistance syndrome, which is a type of sleep apnea, and something prior to our conversation I wasn't too familiar with. And today, Ethan's going to walk us through how this type of sleep apnea affected every aspect of his life, what may have caused it, some of the ways he's tried to cope with it, including a past surgery, and a big motivation as to why he fought tooth and nail and was persistent, not giving up, being totally proactive in his road to recovery. That big why for him was music. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, this is Ethan and his story.
Yeah, I mean, I guess starting in my childhood and how this plays into my story as a whole, but growing up, I was very smart. Pretty much everything came easily for me. All my teachers said I was gifted, I would have a bright future. And as I got older, I started having more problems, but really beginning in high school was when I started having more health issues. And so I remember at the time I was, say, 14, 15, and I just started being a lot more prone to becoming depressed. I would become a lot more tired during the day, as well as developing a lot of brain fog. Which obviously brain fog is kind of a subjective term, means something different depending on who you ask. But I remember I'd be in school and about halfway through the day, I would just hit this wall where I just was so tired. I couldn't focus anymore. So I'd go home and basically just nap and wake up and I'd still be too tired. Couldn't focus on my homework. And then I couldn't sleep because I had just napped all afternoon. And so that went on throughout high school until I started trying these different lifestyle changes my senior year of high school because my academics were really suffering. So I started doing things like cycle commuting, riding my bike everywhere locally, drinking only water, try and make changes in my diet. Like I tried intermittent fasting, meditation, and all these kinds of things, but I kept feeling worse. So that's kind of the background in terms of like my childhood leading up to my adulthood.
That's interesting that early on, right away, you were taking matters into your own hands, making lifestyle changes, experimenting with yourself to try to better your condition. Did you at all prior to this seek professional help?
Yeah, I mean, at the time when I started doing some psychotherapy and went to the doctor here and there, and they would usually just say that it was because of depression, which that's, I feel like, just kind of the cop-out when you come and say, oh, I'm having XYZ symptoms, and they say, well, it's because you're depressed. But at the time, it's like, I didn't really know any better, so I had this mentality of, well, if depression is what my really what my problem is, then I'm sure there are lifestyle changes I can make in order to help myself to feel better. So that was the mentality and why I started experimenting with those things.
So how did that play out for you? The psychotherapy, fasting, diet changes, lifestyle changes. Did you see any positive results or did any success come from it?
Yes, but not significantly. I remember, for example, when I would do intermittent fasting, I would feel less bloated. And also because I used to eat a breakfast of like a glass of milk and eggs. And so cutting that out and just drinking water and skipping breakfast, I actually felt like my digestion improved. I did notice too that with the meditation, I felt like it would give me a bit more distance between my thoughts. So one thing I remember, for example, was, you know, this was years ago, but this stuck out for me, where I dropped something and my immediate reaction was that I wanted to swear, but I had this split second time where I was about to get angry. And then I realized, oh, well, there's no point in getting angry because I can just clean this up. So I just cleaned it up instead of like swearing at myself. So those were some of the improvements, but I still had this unshakable sense of chronic fatigue, brain fog, not being able to focus, and just not quite feeling like myself, or like something just wasn't quite right.
Suffering the way that you were mentally, the brain fog, emotionally, physically, feeling drained, exhausted, the chronic fatigue, as well as academically. What about socially? Your relationship with your friends or family members, was that affected in any way?
Yeah, I mean, my family, I think too, they thought that I was just becoming more depressed. But I would say at the time, I started struggling more also with anxiety socially and started feeling more shy and just generally awkward, which was kind of different from my childhood, where, like I said, I pretty much everything came easily. I made friends easily. But going through after finishing high school, which I actually had to take summer school to get my diploma because I failed one of my physics classes. But yeah, after finishing high school, then, remind me what the question? Oh, it was how I was doing socially.
Yeah.
I started going to more like rave events locally. And sometimes I remember I'd show up with one or two friends, but I was so quiet. My friends of the friends would, they say, hey, what's up with Ethan? Like, he's really quiet. Why doesn't he talk much? And at the time, I think I was just shy or introverted. But again, I don't think I was necessarily able to look back, or at the time I couldn't necessarily put that together and realize that perhaps something physically was wrong, and that was influencing the brain fog, which was influencing how I felt like it was becoming more difficult to connect to people socially. So moving on, I guess through my adulthood, I ended up going to an audio trade school because I had this mentality of maybe if I try staying engaged with my hobby or my, music and audio hobby, then this would help me with my depression. But if anything, it just ended up making me feel worse. And I kind of had the same problem if I just barely graduated. And so it was actually after finishing the trade school was around the time the COVID pandemic started. And that was when I just hit this wall where I'm like, physiologically, something's just not adding up here. I just keep feeling worse despite everything I'm trying. And so I went on this huge journey where I spent that whole year doing a lot of research online. I was researching brain fog and talking to other people on Reddit about what could be causing brain fog. And so I started basically created like a huge list of things that it could possibly be and started going one by one, seeing doctors and checking things off. And it wasn't actually until the end of the year when I came across a type of sleep apnea called URS, or upper airway resistance syndrome, and things started clicking to me. At first, I didn't think sleep apnea was the problem, even though now I guess that would make sense that chronic fatigue and brain fog would be related to my sleep, but I thought sleep apnea was something that affected people that were older, heavier, snored, had like a wider neck or whatnot, but I kind of was in the opposite demographic. And so I read online that these people were saying that they would do sleep studies. These young, thin people would do sleep studies that showed that there weren't apneas or oxygen desaturations, but then they found out they still have this breathing problem called URS. And so I guess to put a bit more context, the obstructive sleep apnea originally was discovered in the 60s, and it was studied in mostly people that were heavier and presented with daytime sleepiness and kind of fitted that demographic. And then in the 90s, it was found that there were more studies done on thinner people where they would complain of this daytime fatigue, but they might not have the same apneic episodes. But it was found that their sleep quality was still being fragmented because, let's say, they'd be struggling to breathe in their sleep, and the resistance in the airway would still create these arousals that would prevent them from getting restorative sleep. But their body might not be so sensitive to where they actually completely stop breathing. And so you might, a person with this condition might fall asleep, spend all night struggling to breathe and never get any REM sleep, but they might not show any noticeable decrease in their oxygen desaturation. So I kind of went down this whole rabbit hole then, learning about jaw development and jaw structure and how that plays into things like airway health. And things started clicking more as I realized that I had gone through braces twice because my teeth were so crooked and my jaws were not developing in the correct way. I kept developing these issues with my bite. And so I was like, I feel like this is it, and this adds up. I did eventually do a sleep study, but the sleep clinic, I didn't feel like had enough understanding to properly diagnose the URS, but I was diagnosed on paper with mild obstructive sleep apnea because there was a little bit of apneas, which was super ironic because at this time I was like, you know, could barely leave my house basically just because of how much fatigue I had. I had to leave all my jobs. I couldn't do school anymore. And so I would say that it was around that time when I pinned it down to that issue.
Through all this active research on your part, digging through online information and trying to find the root cause of your condition or get any type of answer, what was the general consensus like for the doctors that you visit? Did each one of them write it all off and label it as depression?
I mean, kind of a mix. I remember I saw one psychiatrist, and when I said, "Oh, I am having brain fog," he said, "Well, this is like an ADHD thing," which again, at the time, brain fog is a very vague term, and I could see how that would be misdiagnosed. But I didn't necessarily realize how abnormal it was that this brain fog wasn't just something that was impacting my concentration, but it was impacting my entire view of the world and the way that I interpreted my life and the things that were happening around me. I think probably one of the doctors that maybe had some kind of an idea was, I went to an allergist and I was saying, I'm having this brain fog. And I saw on Reddit, some person said they found they had very bad environmental allergens. And their brain fog improved when they started treating that. And so they suggested to me, "Oh, do you ever like wake up gasping in your sleep? Because then you could have sleep apnea." But again, I've never experienced waking up gasping. I've never snored. And at the time too, I just thought this was something that affected the older population, like my grandpa who does, I knew had diagnosed sleep apnea. But it wasn't until really other people online, I started talking to with this issue. Like I remember it was around this time at the end of 2020, I joined this Discord called Sleep Disorder Breathing, and I talked to other people around my age with similar issues. There's one, for example, a guy from France who also has an interview online. If you search Rafa UARS, R-A-F-A, that's his name, UARS, who's this French guy. And I was kind of flipping out, like messaging this guy, like, "Look, like I'm having this scatterbrain, now I'm getting all these intrusive thoughts. The whole world is just fogged up and I don't know what's going on." He was kind of reassuring me like, "Yeah, I have all those symptoms. That's what it feels like and you're going to be okay." So it wasn't really even the doctors, I feel like, that were so much as helpful as research that I did, as well as research that I did just from talking to other people online that were going through similar things. Going from 2020 into 2021, this whole year was like my hell year, where it was kind of just a blur for me. I felt like I was just existing in a survival mode and felt like I was just frantically trying to figure out treatment. And so the first thing that I tried was a CPAP machine. And then I also later tried a BiPAP machine. So basically when we breathe, then as we go into the deeper stages of sleep, like REM and deep sleep, the muscles in our body relax and our body starts to focus on healing itself. But for me, it was actually when the muscles in my throat would relax that the breathing issues were at the worst. And so I learned that this comes from an issue called negative pressure, where as the negative pressure is generated in the airway from the airway being constricted, this creates collapse and breathing issues. So these machines is called positive airway pressure machines. There's a continuous and a bi-level one. And I really struggled to tolerate that. But I did notice that there were a handful of days where, let's say, I would wake up and it would be like a new layer of brain fog would lift and I could access a part of my mind I felt like I couldn't access before. Where, let's say, I would wake up the first time I noticed a difference and I sat down on my computer and worked on music for like 4 straight hours, whereas before I couldn't make anything for 4 months. And so for me, I was like, I know I'm definitely going in the right direction, but it was reaching the point where these machines were starting to cause panic attacks because it would create this feeling of almost like I was drowning or suffocating on air. So I was like, this is not really sustainable. And when I was posting in the group chat on Discord, these people were talking about this new kind of an adult palate expander called an MSE or maxillary skeletal expander. So I started researching this, and the idea is that when our jaws don't develop as large as they should, then they're more narrow and recessed in our skulls. And by widening the upper jaw, this can help widen the floor of the nose and improve our breathing. Growing up, like, I was a mouth breather, but I didn't realize how bad my breathing issues were because that's just what I was used to. And so I started calling around and found this local orthodontist who did this procedure. And so I came in to do a consultation. Pretty much the first thing he said was, this probably won't fix your problem. The best treatment is a type of surgery called a BiMax advancement or double jaw surgery, where they cut and advance both of your upper jaws so that they're no longer recessed in your skull. Because if you imagine the size of a person's airway is the distance from their spine or their jaws to their spine. So by advancing the jaws forward, it expands the whole airway here. Initially, my parents weren't cool with that because they were like, who wants to see their son get their jaws cut off their face? But I was doing all this research and talking to people, and I'm like, I really think that this is what I need. And so I kind of reached back out to this orthodontist and said, look, like, I just need to keep this ball rolling. I want to get the expander, but I also want to start consulting surgeons for this jaw surgery procedure. And he said, Ethan, I totally support you in that. But the problem was I wanted to consult with 4 or 5 surgeons. But the surgeon that I ended up doing the operation was the one that I was originally referred to, who mostly just did more like simple bite correction and wisdom tooth removal. So kind of going into as I kept progressing from 2021 to 2022, I was trying to plan this surgery. I started doing this orthodontic work, got back in braces for like the third time. I also learned too, I realized things were connecting and clicking. I grew up with some issues with speech and with my tongue. I had a bit of a lisp. And again, I grew up mouth breathing. So basically when you swallow, your tongue is supposed to rest up and press up against the roof of the mouth. And if you do this as a child, when your bones are still malleable, that gentle force of the muscles, the tongue, can actually encourage the jaws to develop wider. And so I was able to put that connection of, I grew up with this problem where I couldn't position my tongue properly in my mouth. And that was why I kept developing this open bite problem. And that was related to these issues with my jaws. And so it reached the point where it was like fall of 2021. I just kind of shut down. And I just told my orthodontist, I'm like, look, I'm done chasing down doctors. I just need to feel better. I'm going to go to the surgeon you referred me to. And I started basically fighting my insurance company, trying to figure out how I could get coverage for this procedure. And I was also thinking about if I ended up not winning the insurance case, I could do medical tourism to Mexico and pay it the out-of-pocket cost, which was like a fraction of the cost that it was here. But because I ended up winning my insurance case, I did the surgery here. Went into the surgery and I was already, you know, just feeling like a tired corpse, but I was at the end of my rope and I'm like, I just need to feel better. And so we did the operation. The recovery was a lot more difficult than I had intended. But I did notice right away that I no longer felt like I was waking up like I was being hit by a truck. Some of my fatigue was improving. And slowly by slowly, I felt like as my airway wasn't swelling, I was noticing improvements, like my nasal breathing was getting a lot better. I didn't have to breathe through my mouth anymore. And I also started going back to work. I picked up a part-time job, which at the time I still felt exhausted, but it was just the fact that I was able to show up for this part-time job was huge compared to before. It was like I was stuck in this black hole. I started using the money from my work to pay to go to the clubs again. I started trying to make an effort to promote my music. I started riding my bike again, tried going back to part-time school. And so I was noticing these little improvements, but I still kind of had this unshakable brain fog. And I felt like something wasn't quite right. As I went past the 6-month mark, I realized that I was developing a worsening pain, which was localized to a very specific region of my neck, because it felt like my airway was basically lopsided, like I was breathing like this. So I'd wake up with pain in my neck. I realized that there was a bit of lip incompetence, meaning when I try to close my lips to rest, I have this kind of open lip posture. And so I have to basically exert effort to keep my mouth shut. And so I reached back out to this orthodontist and I said, look, I don't think that the surgery was done correctly. And I want to get second opinions from surgeons that focus specifically on the airway. And so obviously it was very frustrating. I was like, I went through this huge surgery and ended up improving my situation, but not resolving it. But that was actually something that there were some people on the server that were warning about me about. They said, you shouldn't go to this random local surgeon, because we've had other people in our server that didn't go to these fancy elite airway surgeons and they it didn't fully solve their problem. And now they have to get the surgery revised. And so that was basically what the situation that I ended up being in. And this was like end of 2022 going into 2023 was when I was like, I think that this wasn't done properly and I want to get it revised.
During this time, the hell period, as you put it, you mind explaining or sharing with us some of that experience, what you were dealing with, how it felt mentally, physically, the exhaustion, the frustration, the discomfort?
Yeah. So this was kind of like 2020 going into 2021, and then before my first surgery. Like I said, I felt like I was basically just in a survival mode, and like I was didn't have any real energy, but I was just trying to continue seeing doctors and functioning off of like exhausted fumes of my nervous system. So I was always nervous. I'd wake up and just immediately feel like fatigue in my body. And that's the thing too, is it's very difficult to describe subjectively to people that haven't experienced this, because I felt severely dissociated. So one of the terms that I came across online, it was called derealization, where I didn't just feel like this fog was in my brain, but I felt like this fog was the entire world basically seemed like a fog. And so even my vision was blurry. Things were out of focus. My hearing wasn't as clear as it used to. My reflection didn't look right to me. This all-encompassing sensory fog that I was in. I'd get up and basically just have no motivation for the day. And I basically felt like my whole life was just me trying to find ways to pass time and kill time until I could start to sleep better. But that was the thing, was because I felt so emotionally flatlined and anhedonic, things that used to bring me enjoyment, like working on music, watching movies, going to the club and hanging out with friends were felt like meaningless to me. It wasn't something that brought me any sense of enjoyment anymore. I would say those were a lot of the main symptoms of what I was dealing with. After my second surgery, when I did a follow-up sleep study, I consulted one of the surgeons. His name was Dr. Casey Lee. from the sleep apnea surgery center in California, like in the Bay Area. And he said, I want you to go see the sleep neurologist and do a follow-up sleep study. And so I did a sleep study. And when this doctor, Dr. Rama, from I think it was the Sleep and Brain Institute, he said, oh, like, is this what a typical night of sleep is like? Because this has probably been 5 or 10 years since I've seen this much disruption in the sleep architecture. He basically said every time I would, and you can even see like on it basically has a track from the different stages of sleep. Every time I would hit like REM or deep sleep, it would just go directly back into light sleep. And so at the time, I think I slept, you know, all night, like probably 8 or 9 hours, but I woke up just absolutely destroyed. I mean, I remember like I would describe it as like I would wake up feeling worse than before I went to sleep. And it was just this constant thing that I couldn't escape from. Even before 2020, because I still had this fatigue, but it's not like I really understood how abnormal it was to be that exhausted all the time. But I would say it was 2020 was just when I felt like my body just couldn't go on anymore. That's when I started describing it as like waking up in the morning, I felt like I was being hit by a truck. And that was a common symptom too, that a lot of other people online were describing as like just waking up and immediately like just feeling fatigued all over your body. It's like I'd wake up and the very first thing that would go through my mind is just being aware of like how tired I am and how awful my sleep quality was.
Considering everything that you've been through up until now, including the surgery, the first surgery not going according to plan, how has life been for you these days, especially in comparison to what it was in 2020?
My life is immensely different than it was back in 2021, but I still, I basically just feel like I'm functioning at like a snail's pace. And so it's like, I don't really feel like it's quite as like this constant pain where it's like, I'm always nervous, but at the same time, it sucks. And I guess what really drove me and still drives me to feel better was when I would notice improvements and let's say I would work on music and I was like, wow, like I'm really good at making music. I want to see where this leads if once I fully solve this problem. And so I kept becoming more optimistic where I was like, you know, I think this is what I want to do. I want to do music. And you can, if you listen to my music and it's Origin of Styx, STYX, you can find me on any platform, streaming platform, Spotify, SoundCloud, YouTube, Apple Music. But I have a lot of these themes of sleep deprivation, trauma, dissociation, and kind of like how you mentioned earlier, this sense of being in like a waking dream state and how all of your senses are distorted when you're that tired.
It's crazy to me to think that everything that you've been going through physically, your body feeling the way that it's felt, the motivation, the drive, the exhaustion mentally, not there, not 100%, not anywhere near being 100%. But in spite of all that, doing what you did, because you shared something with me beforehand, the fact that you did this crazy bike ride from Arizona to California, how were you able to do that while going through the things that you were going through? What was your motivation? What was your drive? And what was that experience like?
Basically when I was 17 and my senior year of high school, when I was trying to make these lifestyle changes, I started cycle commuting. So I didn't really drive much. I didn't feel comfortable driving because my concentration wasn't great. But again, so I didn't really realize how abnormal that was. It just gave me anxiety. And so instead of, say, getting rides from my family, I started just cycling to and from school. And I kind of had this realization where I was like, you know, maybe if I just set off on my bike and do this totally crazy trip, it will like reset my brain. I'm not going to be depressed anymore. I think it was too, like, because I was so bored at the time, I would just started doing long distance cycling, where I would just be like, I don't really feel like sitting in my room and twiddling my thumbs because I'm not motivated enough to read books or work on music. So I'm just going to like aimlessly ride my bike around Phoenix. But it was kind of just came out of this sense of frustration where I was just like, I'm just so done with school. I just want to go out and do something like exciting. It was that fall, like when I finished my senior year of high school, that I started out on my bike trip. And I definitely think that my fatigue was affecting me. But again, I would mostly notice it as like, I would sleep like 10 hours. I'd wake up and my legs would still just be super sore and achy. I'd ride my bike like literally all day. And I just wasn't getting the enjoyment that I thought that I would from it. You know, it was kind of like how I mentioned, I went to trade school with this mentality of, oh, maybe if I try engaging with my hobby of music and audio, then I won't be depressed anymore. But I just felt more tired and more depressed. And so that was why I kind of, after my bike trip, I was like, you know, that was admittedly kind of disappointing. I thought that I would enjoy that and get more out of it. But it still is, I mean, don't get me wrong, that's still like an awesome story. It's probably like the coolest thing that I did that I can share with people.
That is one hell of a ride. How many days or weeks did that take you? And how many hours did you clock in on the road? What was the distance and the length of that overall trip?
So it was like a week. It was a little over 400 miles. And then I think I was riding like 50 or 60 miles a day. So I basically wake up, take my tent down, and I had like a trailer that had like all my backpacks and everything. So I would bike and carry this trailer that had like my tent, food, sleeping bag, as well as just whatever else. You know, basically, it was basically like backpacking. Since I was a Boy Scout, I did backpacking trips, and so I knew how to plan accordingly. But I would basically just wake up, ride, you know, a few hours, stop somewhere, like get lunch, ride a few more hours, stop somewhere, put in my tent, and basically just did that for like a week until I made it to San Diego. I actually had purchased maps online that had the trail laid out specifically for cyclists. And so I wasn't on like major roads. It was mostly just back roads. A lot of times there were so few cars, I could just take up the whole like road. And I, you know, sometimes for, I remember there were times where for miles I wouldn't see other people. But it actually what was interesting, and this is why I ended up going back, was I had planned, I bought tickets for a concert to see the band Death Grips in LA. And I went from San Diego, I started riding my bike up the coast, and I got about halfway from San Diego to LA and had an incident where it was like one of the spokes on my wheels like cracked or something. And I was in this situation where I didn't want to carry this to a bike shop. I actually stopped at a bus stop and I'm like, hey, my bike broke down. I'm trying to get to the next city so I can find a bike shop. And he was like, well, you can't bring your bike onto the bus. He said you could, but you had to have it like strapped to the front of the bus. But I was like, I can't because it's broken. That's the point. That's why I had to get it to the next city. And he was like, well, then you can't come on the bus. So it was kind of just a split second decision. I left the bike and basically took the bus from San Clemente to LA, stayed at a hostel there for a few days and got to see my concert, and then basically took a train back from LA to I took it from LA to Flagstaff, and one of my family members picked me up there.
After embarking on a once-in-a-lifetime trip like that and finishing it, hitting your mark, what were you going through? How were you feeling inside? What did that do for you?
It's one of those things where after accomplishing that, it definitely did make me feel more confident. That's why, too, like I felt so confident, like I can't wait till I solve this problem and fix my health, because if I can do stuff like this despite these issues, it makes me feel like I can't be defeated, like I'm immortal or something.
Is it fair to say that that bike ride helped motivate you and put extra fuel in your tank to want to seek out ways to better your situation, to better your condition, and to get well? Or did you have anything else in your life that was motivating you, driving you, and giving you a will to want to get well and get better, as opposed to throw in the towel, give up on life, and just say, you know what? Forget it. I'm done.
That was one of the things, but I would definitely say it was the music that was more influential, where as I was going on and making more music, then I was just feeling like, wow, like this, I think I have a talent. Like, this is what I want to do with myself. When I look back at, say, the music and on a lot of my album covers, you'll even see this later, I incorporate elements from my health issues with my music. And so I view it as almost like a kind of audio journal, where it's like, if I have to look back at those few years, what do I have to show for myself? Well, it's like, this is what I did with myself. And so on some of my album covers, I wore like my Halloween costume, where I dressed up in like the black metal corpse paint. And for me, it was kind of symbolic of how I felt like The Walking Dead at the time. And then some of my album covers, I use like scans of my jaws, or like one of them has like a picture of like my palate expander. And so I was able to incorporate like the health with the music, and basically can use that to like look back at what I've accomplished.
And to anybody listening right now and curious as to what you do, if they want to hear some of your music, can you point them in a direction to where they can find and listen to the work that you have available right now?
Yeah, it's pretty much on any platform. I do have a link called the Linktree, which is basically if you go to a Linktree, then there's like five or six links that come up. But if you just search my project, Origin of Sticks, Origin of STYX, on pretty much any streaming platform, then it should come up. Bandcamp too, for people that prefer like to download the MP3s. I've actually also had like a handful of people that wanted to press like physicals. So I worked with a guy from California, and he pressed CDs, and I basically signed my CDs. So I view it as basically like a signed audio journal is how I describe that. So if you search that on Bandcamp, you can actually get like some of my physicals as well.
For sure. And that information will all be included in the show notes. So anybody listening right now who's interested in what Ethan has going on, the work and the projects that he has available, they can check out the show notes, and all those links and information will be provided right there. So we know you had the first surgery, which didn't go according to plan, unfortunately. Now, how was that second surgery supposed to play out, or do you have any idea what the process is going to look like?
Yeah, I guess firstly I'll explain what went wrong the first surgery, and then what is proposed to resolve the issue. I consulted two surgeons. Like I said, the first was from a centered sleep apnea surgery center in the Bay Area, and the second was it was called Arnett Gunson Facial Reconstruction in Santa Barbara. Both me and my mom definitely liked the second surgeon more because he went super in depth. He sat down with us for basically a couple of hours and explained everything in detail. But he basically said, firstly, like, I'm not trying to sell you this surgery or tell you you need this, but I would have done the surgery differently, and this is what I would have done. He explained that the purpose of the face is to breathe, eat, and communicate. But if there's some kind of an issue with the way that that face develops, then the body has to basically exert extra effort and compensate in order to do those things. He did tell me, too, that he said, I might have other patients with your similar airway size or jaw structure that might not be as debilitated as you are because you seem very receptive to problems that are happening in your body. The word he used was called interoception, which basically means kind of being hyper aware of things that are wrong. And so what he basically proposed was that, you know, basically if a jaw is receded, then it develops more into this kind of vertical pattern as opposed to developing down, forward, and out like this. And so what he basically proposes is by doing a larger rotation on the upper jaw, because the surgeon that I was referred to before, I think just didn't have the skill and knowledge to perform that kind of movement. He can basically get the lower jaw forward and then bring the chin back. If you can kind of see right now, my lower jaw is actually still receded, but my upper jaw is like sufficiently forward. So I'm kind of breathing like this. And that's why there's a bit of a discomfort in my chin here, where it basically feels like the skin is not in the right place. And so basically by bringing the chin back and rotating the upper jaw more, he can get the lower jaw forward to sufficiently positioned so that I'm not like breathing like this all the time. That's basically what the issue is. But so I never felt like my symptoms got to the same extreme as before the first surgery. But at first, things were starting to improve. I started working again. But I was really struggling at work, especially like going into the winter. I would have sinus problems. And so I remember there were times where I'd show up to work and basically just space out the whole time and barely have any recollection of what happened after work. And so I was feel like less aware of myself and my surroundings. There are times I felt like my coworkers would even check in on me, make sure that I was doing okay. Or I would try doing something and then I would just lose focus. Like, what am I doing? Like, I can't do this right now. So it was like, I was still just barely functioning. I think that I was just so smart that I could kind of compensate for that. But then I really struggled. Like, let's say at the time, my mom wasn't super supportive of just jumping into the surgery. she was like, I want to explore everything else first because maybe you're just mentally ill. And so I saw a lot of psychotherapists. Like, pretty much I spent 2023 like seeing all kinds of different psychotherapists doing all kinds of different therapeutic techniques. I even was hospitalized a handful of times because of problems where I started to content warning, self-harm, and binge drinking. And so I was put on antidepressants, which sometimes would help a little bit, and I could focus more on my music. But at least for me, what's interesting is I always noticed a very strong correlation where even if my sleep improved just a little bit, it was like my whole experience of the world would change. So back in the winter, when I was having these sinus problems, I started taking the bus to work because I didn't feel comfortable riding my bike because my concentration was so poor. And once they started to improve, or going into the spring, I started being able to breathe through my nose better and I started cycling again. But I had this kind of incident where I woke up and I was hoping I could catch up on some sleep. But when I woke up, I felt like my mind was stuck in mud and detached from my body. So I started riding my bike to work, but everything in the world felt wrong. I felt like I had just stepped onto a Universal Studios movie set, kind of like in the Truman Show. And I basically just started panicking on the side of the road. I texted my boss and I was like, I'm having a panic attack right now and I don't think I should be at work. And so I kind of had this realization then where I'm like, why am I risking my life riding my bike to a minimum wage job when my concentration is so bad? If I fix my sleep breathing problems soon, like in a few years, I'm going to be touring clubs all over Europe. And so I was like, this doesn't really make sense to me. I ended up leaving that job. And that was when I went, did all these different kinds of psychotherapy, tried all these different antidepressants. But again, I felt I was just still fighting this constant uphill battle. And so that's really what it took for my mom to take me seriously enough and realize like, okay, definitely this can't just be a mental thing. Like, I think that this needs to be treated physiologically. And so as of right now, it was like, I've been doing some freelance work here and there for people online with my music. But I actually just am starting a new job next week where I'm trying to collect signatures for some kind of political campaign, even though I'm not super involved in politics. But I feel like if I could just spend a few days a week where I'm basically just talking about people, talking politically and asking them questions about what their beliefs are and why they're voting the way that they're voting. And so for me, I don't really think that's going to be particularly difficult to manage, but it's only a 2-month campaign. So it's not like I have to do this all year. Then after that, I can kind of take a break and reassess. Maybe just, you know, at least for me, my plan is that once I get the revision surgery and if it does what I expect it to do, then I'm going to be able to go back to working at the library, start to get back to riding my bike again, or I mean, even ideally go back to driving. And I want to promote at the library and work full time. So that's really where I'm at now and what I want to do once I resolve it. I would consider myself a freelance audio engineer in the sense that I have my own music project, Origin of Sticks. I produce my own music and then I DJ my own music. So, I mean, if I could get booked as say Ethan Hackett and I can play whatever you want me to play, but if you're booking me as Origin of Sticks, I only play the music I made myself because I try to stand out from other DJs. But the goal eventually, I have DJs here and there at raves locally, but the plan, the dream is that I want to basically tour all over and help other people with their music in their studios, as well as touring, you know, being able to see what the club scene is like in Amsterdam and Berlin and London and whatnot, and basically be able to explore the club scene and the rave scene in these different countries.
I'm not too sure if we touched on this, but with your condition, was this something that you were born with or did this develop over time?
Yeah, that's kind of its own rabbit hole. So one of the things, for example, when I consulted with this orthodontist that put this expander on me was he said, you know, you do know that you have a tongue thrust. And I said, I know, I understand that's part of the problem and why my jaws didn't develop the way that they should have. What I actually learned is that orthodontics, which is about straightening teeth, that, you know, came about in like the early 20th century or something. But for the longest time in human history, our teeth weren't really particularly crooked. And so especially like early humans, if you look at their skulls, they have straight teeth, their bites are good, and they have these like large, robust jaws. And so I learned that there are certain factors now that influence our jaws to not develop as large as they used to. One of the things is it was from the work of a British orthodontist where he actually calls himself an orthotropist. Orthodontist, it means correct teeth or straightening teeth, but he created this school of thought, which is about correct facial growth. His name was John Mew, and I think he started researching this in the 50s or the 60s. And he believed that a lot of factors like the fact that we're no longer breastfed as long as we used to, because when a baby is breastfed, that basically encourages them to get this tongue posture where their tongue is up and suctioned up on the roof of their mouth and can encourage their jaws to grow to be wider, as well as things like more people mouth breathe because we live indoors more. This can trap allergens. Our foods are softer because if we grew up as hunter gatherers, then we would chew tougher foods and have to chew for a long time, which could help encourage our jaws to develop in younger times. So all of these I learned were factors, but for me particularly, the issue mostly had to do with I had asthma as a child, and so that kind of predisposed me to mouth breathing. If you're breathing through your mouth and you're not don't have this posture where your mouth is closed, your tongue is up on the roof of your mouth, you're breathing through your nose, then that is what kind of encourages your jaws to develop to be more narrow, set back in your jaws, and then there's not enough room in your mouth for all your teeth, and that's what causes teeth crowding, as well as just the lisp and the tongue thrust that I grew up with, I would say are the other two big factors.
And these days, are you taking anything to help with your sleep? Changing up your pillowcase, your mattress, CBD oils, sleeping pills, anything like that?
Yeah. I mean, I've experimented with a lot of medications, both antidepressants and then also different sleeping pills. For me, it's like there are times where I could fall asleep naturally, but I would get very anxious. So I would lay in bed and I would feel really tired. But at the same time, I couldn't fall asleep. And it was kind of like, if I get up, then I'm not really motivated enough to do anything, but I can't really fall asleep just laying here. So I would try and find things like weighted blanket. I put on some ambient music to try and focus my mind on. Otherwise, my mind would just start running. I get super anxious. So one thing I would do is just smoking cannabis, which is legal in my state, like fully legal. But otherwise, there were all kinds of sleeping pills I have tried. The one that probably helps me fall asleep the fastest is Ambien, but I can't take that for too many nights in a row because I feel like it just ends up making me feel more groggy and dissociated. But I do kind of like cycle different sleep aids like that.
And how is it looking for that second surgery right now? Do you have anything set in stone, a timeline, a date in specific, or you're still trying to work that part out?
I don't have a date. I'm just hoping later in the year. Okay. Like I said, I consulted this other surgeon like last month. This is kind of the problem too. This is with the American healthcare is that a lot of the airway focused surgeons are out of network. He explained this in an interview where he said that insurance reimburses about the same cost for wisdom tooth removal as it does for jaw surgery. And so that's why the surgeon that I went to who did my jaw surgery mostly just does simpler procedures like wisdom tooth removal. And I didn't feel like he really had the skill. So that basically inherently makes it even harder to get insurance coverage than it already is. If I'm lucky enough to get insurance coverage, I mean, I would do it tomorrow, but I would expect that that's going to be very difficult. So right now I'm trying to put together like a very comprehensive medical history, talk to all my doctors, getting together all my diagnoses. And, you know, hopefully I can get that later this year.
One thing that I noticed while listening to you take us through your story and some of the things that you've been dealing with is that it seems like you've always had a drive and a will. You were determined to figure out what it was that was wrong with you. You were trying to find answers. You were actively seeking out answers and ways to better your condition. Was there any time, any point in your life going through this? From the beginning through that hell period up into the present where you had lost hope and you just wanted to lay it all down?
I mean, I've described it as I always try staying proactive in improving my situation, but I would struggle with suicidal thoughts. But that was never something that I wanted to act on. It was more of like intrusive thoughts I would get kind of disturbing thoughts like that. Like I said, I was hospitalized a handful of times because, content warning, I was cutting myself and drinking too much. But I would say it was really like back in my chronic illness life in 2021 when I just felt like, you know, some of my friends were worried about me because I wasn't really leaving my house much. I wasn't going out and doing any things anymore. But for me, it was like subjectively, even if I felt 5 or 10% better from using a CPAP or a BiPAP machine, that was enough to where I'd get up and sit down and try and work on some music. So while there were times like I had that temptation to give up, but I feel like I always would try to motivate myself and stay proactive in my situation in any way that I could. I still feel very limited in what I could do, but like I said, I always try and find ways to stay proactive in my situation as well as improving my life and my situation. One thing I've been working on too is just trying to get better at talking to people and working on my social anxiety. Because I remember mentioning before how I would show up to clubs or show up to an event and I was very quiet. People would ask my friends why I didn't talk much. And so it's kind of an uphill battle, but I'm just trying to put myself into more situations where I can slowly work on that. So let's say, for example, like even walking down the street, there was an incident the other day where somebody waved to me and said hello, and I kind of had this realization that this person just said hi to me, and it was such an insignificant part of the day that I just moved on and didn't think anything about it. Whereas for me, even just saying hi to a person felt like this huge deal. And so I was like, I'm going to try, you know, just greeting more people as I walk by. And so then that went to, well, now next time I go to the store, instead of just picking up my stuff and leaving, I'm going to tell the cashier to have a good day. And then that went from, okay, now I'm going to try engaging in some kind of small talk with the cashier, or, try working myself into introducing myself and how can I have like a lasting friendship with this person. So that's basically what I've been working on recently. Like I said, I still feel like I'm just kind of moving at a snail's pace and like I'm just a fraction of what I feel like I could be. But that's just all my subjective experience. Hopefully I'm going to start this job for this political campaign. That'll only be a couple of months and only a few days a week. And then I can save up with the money that I save up for that. I can go to the club more, try working on my interactions as well as just saving up more money for more music equipment. So I'm trying to work on building a studio right now. That's mostly just what I have, what's going on right now while waiting for the surgery. I remember one time when I was younger, I was kind of like shocked because let's say if I was at the grocery store with my mom, then she could just so easily like start small talking with the cashier or to the next person in line. And I'm like, how do you just talk to random people like that? Like for me, it was just baffling. But that's kind of the goal, is I'm hoping that as I expose myself, it just becomes second nature and not something I have to think or even be afraid about.
I want to thank you again, Ethan, for sharing some of your struggles, your challenges, and the ways that this condition, the sleep apnea that you've been dealing with, has affected your life. But not only that, but how you were able to cope with it, ways that you were able to deal with it, the surgery that you had, what went wrong with it, and the hopes for the second surgery and how it's going to correct those issues. Hopefully you're able to get that lined up and in place sooner than later. You have anything else you want to add or some final words before we wrap this up?
I just hope that, well, firstly, thanks for having me. And I just hope that everybody that listened was able to enjoy it or get something out of it. And I hope that the people that do listen, if they follow my music project, Origin of Sticks, then they are able to tie in a lot of my stories and my experiences, and they can see how that relates to my music. Because there's definitely a very strong correlation between the things I went through and the kind of output. So, yeah, you can find me anywhere, all streaming platforms, Spotify, YouTube, Bandcamp. I have like a link tree. And then if you can also reach out to me over SoundCloud Messenger or my email, which is originofsticks@gmail.com. That's pretty much it. Thank you. Thanks again so much for having me and letting me share my story.
It was down the rabbit hole indeed. One psychiatrist called it ADHD. Another doctor, depression. But something wasn't adding up. And Ethan took it upon himself to find those answers. He was on survival mode. Gas tank on E, exhausted fumes, but still, not wanting to give up despite his energy levels being low, body fatigued, and as he said it, emotionally flatlined. How important is a good night's sleep? We might even take it for granted. We all know what it feels like for us going a day or two with little rest. You can't focus, agitated, weak, some even start hallucinating. Sleep deprivation can cause hallucinations, amongst other things. And the sleep study Ethan was involved with showed the doctor more disruptions in Ethan's sleep than he's seen in over 5 or probably even 10 years. Throughout all of this, Ethan did what he could when he was able to do it, cycling from Phoenix, Arizona to San Diego, California. That's one hell of a ride and a once-in-a-lifetime experience. He checked that one off. Also a vocational in audio engineering and being a freelance audio engineer. He's got his music project, Origin of Sticks, producing and DJing his own music. The links to check it out and listen to his work is in the show notes. Ethan has dreams, he has goals, and that's to tour all over the world, from Berlin to Japan and Amsterdam, hitting every continent. And hopefully, soon, he's able to line up that second surgery. Ethan, my friend, you are a giant amongst us. Hope you guys enjoyed the show today. Want to wish you all a great rest of the week. If you found value in it in any way, if it resonated with you, you can always give it a rating. You can share your thoughts by visiting giantsamongstus.com or checking out the YouTube channel where I'm piecing together audio clips and starting to do more with that. We always look forward to your feedback and ways that we can improve the show, what you like about the show, what you don't like about the show. It's all good with us. Because ultimately, we're trying to keep this thing going and we're trying to keep this thing growing. We're going to catch up and do this again real soon. I'm not going to hold you up too much longer. You guys stay safe. You guys stay sane. Enjoy that good weather. And before I go, if you would like to be a part of the show and share your story, or maybe even a story of someone in your life that has impacted you in a positive way, you can always reach out to us via email. I'd be happy to connect. Until next time, and very soon, peace. Do-do-wop, do-wop, do-wop, do-do-do-wop, do-wop. Looking for a sign to know I'm on the right road. Ain't seen no signs since Jericho.